On this week's show, we're live from AGC National 2026, and I am here with the panel of all panels. We'll get to that. All right. It's so awesome to be here with you guys. We just got off stage, so I'm feeling the flow. Chris, how you doing, man?
Good, Jeff. Good. Doing well. So
thank you for having us in, for putting the panel together. We're going to dive into what it's about. But before, we got Cutler with us as well.
Hey, hey. Happy to be here, Jeff.
Yeah, it's cool. We're in a podcast booth, right? Like, Damon, how are you feeling over there?
I feel fantastic, man. I'm caffeinated. I'm ready to spin around in this chair.
That's right. We're hyphenated. We got Podcast Fast Track is actually like running this for us. So for once in my life, I don't have to worry about any of the details. We just get to be here at this fantastic venue. Before we dive into what we want to talk about on technology, et cetera, you guys know, check us out at thecontechcrew.com or check us on social at youtube.com/@thecontechcrew. That's where the snippets come from. And hey, follow my guests because hey, that gives me some credibility. We like those socials. We like those follows.
Are you tired of all the talk about solving the industry's problems and you just want to roll up your sleeves with the industry's best and brightest? Well, the CPC's returning to Denver, Colorado from April 8th to 10th for the 5th annual AEC Integration Summit. That's right, participate in one of the four teams' topics, from frictionless change orders to AI for issue resolution. Identify root causes of these shared pains and discover new approaches to solving. Learn more at constructionprogress.org/AECI Summit 26. The problems you learn to solve could be your own. Join us there.
All right. So I'm going to let y'all do your own introductions because, well, let's just be honest. I don't want to do a lot of work over here. So Chris, tell everybody who you are, where you come from, and a little bit about yourself.
Great. Thanks, Jeff. First of all, I do want to say, first of all, big fan of you, Jeff, and big fan of the Contech crew. I'm always have been for a while now, but my name is Chris Green. I am the SVP, Innovation and Insights at American Global. My role kind of centers around the intersection of construction risk, data, advanced analytics. I help clients with large projects and data-driven decision-making. So I've been doing it for a little over 10 years now, and getting contractors to leverage their data in a way that helps them make better decisions is what I'm all about, connected with risk.
Well, that's awesome because that's what our panel was about. We'll get back to it, but I hope nobody doesn't know who you are, but it's awesome to have you back on the show and sitting down with us.
Yeah, it's great to be here. It's been in several years too, so it's good. I mean, it's good to get the band back together. Yeah. Cutler Knupp, coming from the Haskell Company, large design builder out of Jacksonville, Florida. We are global. I lead our innovation and venture efforts, our group called Disrupt Tech, which if you haven't heard, now you have.
You got to check that out. It's DY, Disrupt Tech, that way. And, you know, good shout out to Hamza, you know.
Gotta love Hamza.
You gotta love Hamza. I've been on before, and it's so awesome because you and I have been around this game kind of from the same time frame-ish. So I feel like it's like kindred getting us back together.
Indeed. I couldn't agree more. Yeah. It's interesting. Maybe we can dive into that a little bit later about, you know, where we think we might have been versus where we are over this time period.
But where we might have been, where we're going to go, and well, how we're going to be wrong.
The future
right?
is bright. Yeah.
The future's bright, but I'm always wrong about it. And not to be left out, Damon, coming on the far end of the show here, first timer.
So yeah, this is Damon Ranieri, Construction Innovation Sustainability Partner at AXA XL Insurance, part of the construction group. We offer value-added services in the form of benchmarking, tech partnerships, whatever the clients need. My background's in construction management. Used to work for Lendlease Chicago. I also teach at Northwestern as part of their project management program. My words there.
This is what we're going to do. We're going to talk a little bit about technology, data, risk, and kind of how it all comes together. But Chris, I want you to talk about, you put our panel together, and what was the impetus behind why you'd want to get this kind of an odd group together? Because on the panel, you guys know I work for Bluebeam, so I represented Bluebeam on the panel, but today just host seat. So why did you want to put this panel together?
Well, first of all, I like working with odd ducks, like the three of you. But, you know, in all seriousness, I am seeing a trend that contractors kind of need help now, more so than ever before, because so much has happened over the past 10, 15, 20 years in this space. And people are basically just kind of like lost and drowning and they need to get back to the basics. We talked a little bit on the panel about like kind of carving the fat and trimming back and getting your foundation right, you know? So I was hoping that you guys could join me on this panel here just to have that conversation. Talk about the shared pains and the shared gains, like you say all the time, Jeff, and try to figure out what does a proper foundation look like and what does success look like in today's world?
Little shout out to Nathan Wood. We're stealing that from you. Shared pain, shared gains, shared risk, shared reward. But to that point, Chris, like Cutler, you're in Haskell, so you're seeing how it's working, but you're also in DisruptTech. So you're investing, you're investigating, you're analyzing. So why is this market right now such a crazy space to be in?
I mean, that's a long list, right? It's super interesting right now in this day and age because of the complexities of the projects. And again, I'm speaking from the seat of where I am today. And I know everybody's business is a little bit different in the space, but the complexities of the projects that we're dealing with, the size. I mean, I know that we're going through a unique inflection point in Haskell. Just our growth has been unreal. And, you know, we're very fortunate for that. But at the same time, that, you know, starts to show the stress, and it starts to push the boundaries to where the organization can go, and the way we've done things isn't the way we can continue to do things, right? So I think it's a unique time, and I think that laying the foundation for DisruptTech and how we've got a team dedicated to help the core business work through some of these growth challenges is at a very unique time right now. So I think we're just now starting to blossom. So it's pretty exciting.
It's crazy too, because like we used to think of like a half a billion dollar project as like a big deal. And now like a 1 billion, it's a billion. I'm waiting for a two. I'm waiting for a three. We're seeing tens of billions. The scale is outrageous. So we'll come back to some of where we thought we'd be, where we think we are now. But I think that's what's great to bring Damon in on the AXA XL side, because like that risk is increasing and you talk about risk. So how has that increase in scope? How has this changed for you?
Well, it used to be, you know, we could look at a submission and, you know, bind a policy kind of like in the sort of like traditional sense. Now you're talking about people that are almost at their limits, you know, in one project. We usually don't say no right off the bat, right? So how are we going to get there? Is there a quota share? Is there some kind of risk sharing, high retention, you know, is there something that we can do to get the client there? Most of these projects are JVs at this point, right? That presents issues because maybe we like a couple of the partners that are current clients. Maybe we used to insure some of the other ones and don't anymore for certain reasons. So that all of it is something that has to be worked through. That's why we do traditionally consider our clients partners, because we're going to get there, right? We'll find a way to get there. But it isn't the straight line path that it used to be. Just, you know, check the submission over the wall and then the policy comes back the other side.
Yeah. And I think that kind of goes to the industry itself, right? I don't think I, when I put this together in the beginning, would have thought of the AE. It was always AEC, right? And then you started putting owners in. And then you got to think like, oh, we got building product manufacturers. We have insurance. We have lawyers. We have this ecosystem, and the entire ecosystem is under a strain from the size of the projects, the scale, the complexity, the speed, you know, and then a dwindling labor force that's taking a lot of that knowledge with them. So Cutler, we got to do this. You're like, you and I've been around a long time. Like, where did you think we were going to be? What are some of the bets that worked and the bets that, you know, didn't? You don't have to talk about the actual companies, but the technologies or the things we thought, because man, I remember sitting down in the beginning of these shows and being like, oh yeah, robots, this, that, it's done. Yeah, it's not done and it's not going to be done. So talk a little bit about the history.
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, when I first came into space, I was from a different industry and came in a bit naive and was like, you know, how hard could this be, right? And, you know, everybody's got a plan and you get punched in the face. And so, you know, then realizing that, you know, it's super valuable to our local communities that we're working in. The infrastructure we're building is like next generation. My kids will be using this you know, these wastewater facilities that we're building. They'll be leveraging these data centers. I mean, you can name it. And I, one thing that I didn't see coming was the influx of the bites and atoms conversation, right? How, like, if you would have told me, actually, construction is going to be one of the biggest bottlenecks for advancing the latest technologies we have on the planet, I would have been like, nah, get out of here, you're crazy. And then here we are, right? And so that's pretty interesting. You know, really excited about robotics. And I think that has, you know, the timeline's been pushed out some, realistically. I think we're having to rethink what the robot actually means. I think everybody just got really excited about, you know, oh, it's going to be out there swinging hammers, just doing the same thing we've always done. And I think that's just kind of shot at this point. We're really rethinking how we can use it. And then just the constraints that have forced us to adapt in a different way than I would have anticipated around, like, labor, around the size of these projects scaling as fast as they have, right? And then some things that I didn't think were going to take place quite as quickly as they are, like changes around design and engineering and how that work is executed, and how technology is playing a role in how that work is executed. So, I mean, it's a mixed bag, but it's pretty interesting. And I feel very fortunate that I get the lens of Haskell, where we do have the architects and the engineers and the builders all under one roof to kind of see how that plays out, right? So,
yeah, that's that contractual method of design build, which creates a better, you know, single team to attack that. But I think it's really interesting that you hit on it. And it's one of the things I found. I mean, mine was a little bit different coming into a masonry contractor, but to realize that the world around us is built by people. Like I said that in the panel, I'll say it every time I talk, like, I didn't realize that. And, you know, it's Dustin Burns who said it one day, like, when you sleep in your bed at a hotel, you don't think about your bed falling through the floor. Thanks, construction, for doing that, right? Because you built a building in such a way that that's what you do. But you're right. Like, when you say to the listener out there, like, we're the bottleneck, it's because the hyperscalers can't be brought online. The advanced manufacturing can't be brought online without us building it physically. And we literally are the physical bottleneck. And to give you an idea, like, to the listener, what does that mean? Well, we're using models now to drive innovation in medicine, in using models to look at the world and come up with solutions for it. But that can't happen until we build it, and we are the puzzle that they have not figured out. And I'm with you. Lots of the bets I made in the beginning, it's so bad that we're this far into it, because I'm on record over and over. So the good thing is we're good at being wrong. So Chris, this is where I like, being wrong happens, but what can we do about being wrong, and how can we maybe leverage technologies to help us?
Yeah,
be wrong better.
Be wrong better. Yeah, stop being wrong. Yeah, we're always going to be wrong. I think it's part of our resilience. You know, I think no one should ever be afraid of failure. I think if you have the mindset, and I have this mindset that, like, there is no failure, you're always going to adapt, you're always going to be resilient, and you're going to kind of, like, go with the flow and change as needed. So if you kind of are always pushing forward, then you don't necessarily have to worry, because you have to have faith in yourself that you will kind of succeed and figure out what you want to. Harder at an industrial macro level, but I think if each person kind of feels that way, you're going to push forward. We're seeing so much change right now. Like you said, there's hundreds of stakeholders out there. The one big difference I'm seeing now is that we are bringing more psychology, more human approach to all of this. It's not necessarily as technical all the time. And I think that's half the battle right there. And that's a very good thing that we're doing that.
It's a really good thing. And to hit on that point of, like, what was it? Is it Albert Einstein that said, if I tried something and failed 99 times, I learned. I didn't fail, I learned. And then on the 100th, I got it right. Like, but that was just the 100th try. And you've got to continue to iterate and learn. But I used to say that. And then I got these, at events like this, I got these, well, they're as gray as I am right now, but wasn't back then, of, no, we can't do that. Well, you're right. We can't fail on projects, right? Lives are at risk. Infrastructure's at risk. So when you say fail, like, what does fail mean? What can we fail at? Because we can't fail at projects.
Right. Yeah. Well, you do your best, right? If you look at making a different decision or a safer decision, you do your best with what's at your fingertips, with the data coming through, with the best practices that we have right now. You can or can't call that failure sometimes, but I think you can always learn from it. And we talked about that on the panel today. Start measuring the good stuff too, not only the bad stuff. Be positive around it. Create this culture in your company that like makes it better for you to measure that stuff. You know?
Yeah, that was really interesting. That was something we learned really early on. Like, if you just measure near misses, you don't get a lot of data. But if you then include people doing things correctly in safety, you get these big numbers. And Damon, I want to bring this to you because you guys do this like benchmarking thing. And what I think is interesting is, like, talk a little bit about that, because I've said this to people over and over. If I keep measuring myself against my own data, I just know how much I suck. I don't know how much I suck against the industry. Maybe I don't suck as bad as I thought. So talk about how benchmarking can help these folks. And you talked about it on the panel, but anonymization, et cetera. But
sure.
Talk a little bit about that.
Okay. Generally, the way it works is a client will go through a questionnaire with us, a standard questionnaire, depending on a whole bunch of them. The one that seems to be pretty popular is the technology adoption maturity, call it TAMI. We basically take their scores and compare it to all the other insureds that have taken the same test, right? And over the years, we've noticed a few things. One, and this is part of the value they get out of it. One is the companies that are, say, like $300 million to, say, like $500 million versus the companies that are $1 billion to $8 billion, right? The jump in technology is so significant between those two, right? And then you get beyond that, and then there is no jump, right? So it's very instructive to kind of say, like, listen, you're good at what you do now. You want to go from point A to point B, you're going to have to spend a lot more than you are right now to get there. And it's, and I, you know, yeah, you could argue with me till you're blue in the face, but this is the empirical data, right? Companies that are at the level you want to be at are spending or invested in tech to this extent. Now, beyond that, it kind of plateaus out. There's only so much tech out there that's going to add value, right? So those are the kind of things we're getting. The other thing that clients really like about this is that you mentioned it earlier, right? IoT, some of these things that were robotics, things that were like early in their development, you know, maybe work great on one project or something like that, but we didn't see the scaled up adoption that we thought we were going to see, right? And that plays out in these benchmarks. And you can, you know, you'll say like, well, you know, you guys scored low in IoT, the IoT category. But I really wouldn't worry about it because so did everybody else.
It's a critical component because, like, if not, you're trying to keep up with the Joneses and it's just not going to work. And I think there's something interesting because we talked about this on the panel as well. It's just like setting a vision is important. And I get to say this so you guys don't have to. Like, you don't have to be a growth business. You can be a lifestyle business. And I think you need to understand that. Like, if you're at that 250 million, we know no matter what you are, when you go through that next to a billion, there's a lot of growing pains and you have to be ready. You have to have the chops for it. You have to have the intestinal fortitude for it. And by the way, quite frankly, you don't have to do it. It is the decision and the vision and the company needs to decide and know. And when you do that, then you got to be like, okay, we're all in. The cards are in. We're going to invest. We're going to change. We're going to do what we want. That's a decision. But I like to see that there's a point at which you sort of plateau and the things work. And that kind of works, right? There's a scale at which a penny on top of it's not going to change any of it, right? So that's what you're hitting on. And people need to make that decision. But also, you know, we just did some research in the middle of this. And there's so many things that fall over that aren't just technology in that. It's process. It's trying to change. You know, it's flying the plane and trying to repair it while it's still in the air. Like, how do you do that? And I'm just kind of interested, like, Cutler, how does a good company tackle that problem? Because you guys went through that. So What does that look like?
Yeah, I mentioned it on the panel too, but I think a big piece of it was having the foresight to carve out some resources. You don't need 10 people, you know, right? It can be one person to start, and depends on your firm size and what makes sense for you. But you need someone that has their head up, that's looking at what's coming and can take an accurate assessment of your business and say, okay, where can we focus? Where's this lower hanging fruit that we can work on? Because typically your business is probably at capacity at, you know, 99% of the time, operating at 99%, you know, so there's not a lot of time for people, you know, similar to your example where you're talking about, you know, if you're walking around with a tablet in front of your face all day on the job site, you're really kind of missing the bigger picture, right? In a lot of cases. And so that's kind of similar, where I think that that's an important piece, is like having resources that can be dedicated to this mission, because there's a lot going on and there needs to be kind of a focus on it, and then the support for it too, right? But it's not easy to redirect some of these ships, right? And even a ship the size of Haskell, right? I mean, we're having conversations internally about, like, you know, maybe is it faster to market concept if we sort of created a Haskell Light, like a little speedboat next to us, and see, like, mimic what the project would look like being, you know, AI first, right? Something like that, rather than trying to inject that and break some of the processes while we're in flight, as to your example. So
that's the innovator's dilemma, right? We've seen that all along. How do you innovate inside of a company that's working like a machine? That is a very difficult process, and there's risk involved in it. And, you know, you're flanked by risk on both sides, and you're invested, Chris, in that risk. How do you guide your partners through that risk phase and that risk assessment, and whether they should or shouldn't? And, you know, do they build Haskell Light, or, you know, don't they?
I think you're right. Like, every company has their own vision, and you have to follow the vision that works for you. So a lot of times companies will come to us and they'll just say, we want to start this journey. How do we start this journey? Then we have very sophisticated clients that say, how do we refine the journey that we're on, right? Everyone's in a different boat. But at the same time, I try to bring it back to keep your data house in order, build the right foundation and data architecture. You mentioned plumbing today, right? So, like, make sure that your data plumbing is in order so that you can build on top of that foundation and you can connect different things like IoT, reality capture, worker wearable technology sensors, anything that goes above and beyond. I find if you start too big, then you're just going to be drowning in everything, because you have 16 different screens up on your wall that say 16 different things because there's 16 different companies. I really try to push for companies to have that single source of truth. I know that is kind of a buzzword, but I think we should be trying to achieve that. I don't think anyone has achieved that just quite yet. But from my perspective, it means connecting your exposure data. What is it? Where is it? How big is it? What's your contract delivery model with your policy coverage? So what are you covered for? Your rates, deductibles, limits. And then you connect that with your failure data. Just being able to measure those three things gives you this idea of project health for the first time. And then when you can measure project health, you can decide what technology solutions do I need to put on there that works for me. In order to do all of that, you need to have a pretty robust data plumbing within your company.
You know, you can't engineer a 15-story building with the foundation, then go, you know, we're going to go 30. Falls over. And that consistently happens. Now, the beauty of technology is you have some flexibility to grow that, but you have to plan for that growth. And that's a key component to what you're talking about. And Damon, you're nodding your head over there, because again, you guys have that vested interest in partnering to make all sides successful with your clients.
We go through a lot to get a partner, a tech partner, onboarded, right? That we're actually going to stand behind and recommend to clients. But when we get there, you know, we are able to confidently say, you know, you are identifying a particular risk. Maybe it's a builder's risk type of thing. And, you know, you might have an issue with a pipe leak, right? Well, we've got technology partners that we can help you put in place to make sure that that is something that is managed, right? And I think that we, a lot of times, and we talked about this on the panel, right? We'll get approached either by a client or by the tech themselves, and they'll say, you know, well, we were really helpful on this one project, you know? Well, that's great. That was one project. We are looking for programmatic changes, right? We're looking for things at scale. I mean, that's been a lot of these topics, a lot of these, like, discussion groups we're a part of, scale is kind of a real issue. And I think you were talking before about some of the techs that really didn't take off, right? And I think scaling is one of them. And that's kind of what we look for in our partners, and what we're going to recommend to clients is this something that can be a part of your business as usual and make an impact at a broad scale?
Yeah, that's one of those things. Like, we hear about the vibe coding all the time, and it's like, well, great, you can vibe code your way to that solution right now, but is it going to scale, and can you roll it out, and can you get adoption? That becomes a different thing. And I'm not going to say that vibe coding's not the way. It's a POC right now. Could it change in the future? I think so. Like, again, I'm not going to predict because I'm just going to be wrong, but we've said this a lot on the panel, and to the listeners, sorry, you missed the panel. So next year you got to come, or this summer, just so you know, we're here planning for the technology summit this summer in August. It's the AGC technology event. If you want to come, hear some of the solutions, some of the talks, et cetera, you guys got to come there. There'll be a website for you guys to check out, but do that. But we'll give you a little something that we didn't talk about. And I didn't prep these guys, so we're just going to do it. There is this two-letter thing floating around, and I want to get a perspective on AI from each of you, from your perspectives, and maybe a little, you know, where could this thing go? So, Chris, we were sitting down last night chatting about it. Like, what are some of your thoughts on it? And where do you think this thing might be going?
So we took a very proactive approach in American Global around AI. So I think it was about a year and a half ago, myself and my colleague, Nancy Rogge, we went all over the offices and we did our AI training roadshow. So a lot of people at the time have never used AI. They were like, how do we access ChatGPT? Where do we go? How do we do it? We did that because we didn't want to say no, shut it all down, right? So we do have the corporate version of ChatGPT within American Global, but we had to train people in how to use the guidelines properly. We had to plant the seed, because for my journey in AI, especially with the LLMs, it was progressive. The way I use it right now is not the same way I used it 2 years ago, right? But I think I had to have that phase to build me up to me now using it. And I think everyone at the company is slowly starting to get that. And it becomes a way to be more productive, yes. And we also talked about this earlier today. It needs to give you time to think more. It needs to give you time to not be lazy, but it's very easy to slip into that area.
It's super easy. And Damon, that's why I want to pitch it to you, because you did have something on the panel that I can connect to this. It's like, how can you make sure that AI is allowing you time to think, or at least how do you approach it?
Yeah, I mean, the comment I was going to make, and I'm not sure if this is where you were going, but the comment I was going to make was, I think we are getting to a point where you would not be competitive anymore if you were not fully utilizing AI. And that could be at the individual level, it could be at a corporate level, but there's going to come a point where companies that are succeeding at winning and delivering work are taking full advantage of AI in every aspect that they can. And it would be impossible for someone to say, like, I'm going to do it the old way. I mean, it's similar to, like, you know, roofers use nail guns. They don't use hammers, right? I mean, like, if someone showed up with a company showed up at your house with a bunch of hammers, right? You'd be like, you guys are going to be up there all day. Like, forget this. Like, I think that's where it's going. That could be a scary concept for some folks, but I feel like the cat, you know, the genie's out of the bottle at this point, right? It's getting better. People are getting more, doing more with it. It's becoming more successful. It's getting more specialized, right? There's more construction specific AIs, right? And yes, and I use it quite a bit, and I can tell you that it finishes nothing, right? Like, it gets me much further, much faster than I ever have before, but, like, it finishes nothing. I finish everything because it is what it is, right? It's a calculator. So I feel like that is where we're going to see, that's what we're going to see happen in the next, I wish I could say 5 years, but I'm thinking more like three or sooner.
That could be in the microwave faster in like a year and a half. But you hit on a lot. The one thing I wanted was, like, how do you help it teach you to learn. So you were talking about this with students, like how you're using it in the student environment. That's okay. Like, because what you hit leads right into how are you leading students into that?
So, yeah. So the class that I teach, we started noticing that some of the assignments were coming in clearly coming out of ChatGPT or Gronk or whatever they were using. And I took the approach, and the university backed this, that I'm going to call you out in class. If I can tell that that's what you did, I'm going to call you out in class. If you can speak to that work intelligently, maybe not accurately, but you've got an opinion of what's on that page, then great. It's a tool and we all need to learn to use it. If you can't, it's plagiarism.
It's such a simple, fantastic way to explain how it can make you smarter or dumber. And that's literally the precipice we're at, is we get to choose smarter or dumber. Because smarter means it gave me that information faster, gave me time to think and digest and make mistakes, right? So now I go to an expert and I have a little bit more of a base. Like, I came to school doing the homework, but we do homework wrong. That's the way it is. Then the teacher gets to teach us. That's exactly what it is. But if I just spit it out, and then, yeah, I'm just dumb. And I'm getting dumber because I'm doing less. I'm just asking a machine that, by the way, is trained to be nice to me and tell me what I want to hear, which, again, that's a total separate topic. But this is the path that we have. And so, Cutler, they've gotten out all that. Now, where do you see the future of this thing going? Like, get out there on the ledge with me.
Yeah, for sure. It's not going anywhere. It's here to stay. It's being used as a thought partner today, which again is great. I'd like to think it's making me smarter, not dumber. However, it can very much be used in that. And I think that the check your work element, like, you know, you had with your students, Stamen's, like, very important element of it. You also can't entrust it with everything, right? So, you know, you're still going to have to do it. It goes back to the conversation. This is a people-driven business. This is humans that are building these buildings for us. And if we can give them tools to do things faster and more efficiently and get the answers in a much more rapid fashion, excellent. I'm all for it. It's great. But you can't let the risks just fall by the wayside as well, you know. So, and that's a big element of it, because if you're opening up your organization to AI, I mean, you have to understand that the majority of your younger employees are already using this today. And how are they using it? Are they using it with your company's information or not? And how do you shut that off if that's an issue? IP leakage is real. There's a ton of other things that come with this whole AI. And again, I'm an optimist. I think we are going to find ways to corral this and help us create robots to do the things that we don't like to do. And I'm fine without ever having to drive again in my life. I know that might make some people upset, but it is what it is. I think as long as we continue to stay in front as much as we can and harness it without inhibiting innovation, then we'll be successful with it. But it's definitely a harbinger for technology in our industry. I definitely 100% absolutely believe that.
I agree, because that's what I always talk about. It's like, we've got to lift our heads up. If our heads are in our iPads, if our heads are in our phones, if our fingers are down doing those things, we're just punching buttons. And there's nothing that can replace a general foreman with years of experience that has the eye. And I said this on a recent show, like, I would love to get here where it could tell me that something's swinging for my head, but I just don't know that we're going to get there for a long time. And I want that general foreman to stop me and say, watch, that's going to come for your head. Or, hey, you've got that hooked in your belt wrong and it's going to fall four stories and go through somebody's head. Like, I want their heads up. And you hit on something really unique too, because if you use the models the way they're supposed to be used, as an ability to democratize the experience. So they're feeding their experience in, and they're actually, I don't want to say talking to it, because it becomes this like weird humanistic thing, but you're training it, right? And you're giving it knowledge that it's going to spit back. But like you said, you know, I got to test you on it. But now at least I can say, hey, here's the short interval plan. Here's what's going on. And I can expect my team to digest it. And then instead of going through a manual checklist with them, I can just ask them to converse with me. Because once a conversation happens, I'm going to uncover this layer of connective tissue to problems, to risks, to other things. So that's where this all comes together. So, you know, we're hitting that time. Cutler, you hit that mic drop for me. I want to give each person, a little parting thought and where to connect with you. So Damon, give me a little parting thought and where can people connect with you?
My parting thought would be AI is a powerful tool, right? I think that all of the IP leakage you mentioned, right? That's all real, but we're in construction. We use a lot of powerful tools, right? And they can be used wrong and hurt somebody. You can be trained on them, get your work done. And I think that's really how you have to approach this. If you want to get a hold of me, LinkedIn's probably the best way.
We'll drop that in the show notes for you. Connect with them. Like we always say, you got to connect with those guests. It gives me street cred, guys. Cutler.
So I would just say it's an exciting time to be in the industry. It's more exciting than ever. Builders keep building. Startups, you know, founders keep building. We need this tough space, but it's absolutely critical to the future existence of how we live our day to day. And it's never been a more exciting time to join the industry. So if you're thinking about it, do it. If you're not in it, consider it. And just keep hammering. And if you want to connect with me, LinkedIn, sometimes a little bit of a mess, or cutler.nup@haskell, just drop me a line.
That's awesome. We'll put it in the show notes. Chris, the master of ceremonies that put us together, but now you got to ride along and give your input. Tell everybody a final thought and where to connect with you.
I mean, my final thought would be deep technical skills are becoming table stakes right now. Now more so than ever, we need to bring back humanity, bring back human behavior, change management. Think about the psychology of it all before deploying. And I think that's going to be more than half the battle. So if you want to have more of a conversation with me, I'm happy to chat. Reach out on LinkedIn, Chris Green at American Global on LinkedIn.
And we'll drop it in the show notes. Chris, thank you so much for putting the panel together, because my final thought is I get to sit in this seat in the wildest ride in the coolest industry with the coolest people, because it is about the human connection. And thank you to AGC for letting us do this, for letting us record, for letting us get on stage, and for just giving us a forum where we can meet incredible people with incredible ideas and be in the best industry there is. So thanks, guys, for joining me. Thank you for tuning in today to Geek Out for our interview with Damon, Cutler, and Chris. To read all our news stories, learn more about us, and to listen to the show, visit thecontentcrew.com. This is The Content Crew signing out. Until next time, enjoy the ride and geek out.